hi, and thanks for joining another edition of Around the Storage Block Podcast. I'm your host, HP Storage Guy, Calvin Zito.
Continuing at SNW, I'm with John Webster. I've known John for, well, back at SNW, probably, what, 2003 or so is when they announced the SMIS standard?
Yeah, we were meeting in a room about to go out on stage and getting to know each other. And
Although I think we talked a little bit about that when we talked about D2D about 8 months ago or whatever that was. But, yeah, anyway, we've known each other through SNW, and now it's fun to be at SNW again and have a chat with you. So I'm kind of going down the storage buzzword bingo and kind of hitting all those like things that are the buzzwords in storage, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about big data. Yeah, exactly. And I probably have a few people that will say,
that's a buzzword? Really?
Well, one of the things I've not spent a lot of time talking about big data, because I in terms of what HP's offering is, I think we've kind of divided big data into kind of two categories. It's the place you're going to put it, and I think for us, at least, one of the places that is storage, as we've talked about, is IBRIX and scale-out NAS. And I think you've got some opinions there that I want to get to, but then the other part of it is analytics. But from your opinion, you've seen a lot of different vendors, a lot of different definitions, probably people that are misdefining it. What do you call big data? What is big data?
Well, I've divided it into two categories, basically. You know, vendors talk about big data and apply it to storage. And typically that is scale-out NAS.
Yeah.
Right? So it's lots of storage, lots of data. It's one space to put it in, you know, global namespace to go retrieve it. You know, and it scales out, you know, through nodes. And that's typically the way that a storage vendor talks about big data. Okay? It's just lots of data.
Yep. The repository side. They're talking about just where you're going to store this stuff.
Yep, right. So here's where the confusion comes in, because I do think this is used in a confusing way. Big data analytics is actually very different. And the term big data actually comes from the analytics community.
Right.
Okay? And what the analytics community is sort of trying to get at with this term big data is something that isn't necessarily traditional data warehousing. So this is bigger in terms of the volume that a traditional data warehouse could potentially handle. It's faster, i.e. closer to real time. And it also takes into consideration the fact that there's structured data, unstructured data, unstructured data from lots of different sources, all of which could be potentially combined to deliver new kinds of information, things that you can't traditionally get out of a data warehouse. So it's a way, it's a way of saying that's one way of doing it, the data warehouse, but we have a new way, and they're referring to it as big data analytics.
Yep. So there's like about 12 questions that pop into mind, but hopefully these are easy, because I know I probably will. Every time I ask you a question, it's going to raise more questions for me that I want to understand. But first of all, does big data require that it is both structured and unstructured? Or somebody doing big data, is there a siloed approach of, you know, I'm only dealing with unstructured data and that's all I care about because maybe I'm a movie company and that's what I want? Or maybe I am a database vendor and I want to search real-time flight information, so it's structured data. So is there a difference? Does it have to be combined, or are there siloed approaches to big data?
Oh, no, there are no rules here, really,
right,
when it comes right down to it.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, it's...
Well, I'm trying to get you to define what those rules are so that the vendors stop messing it up and turn it into a buzzword.
No. If you're confused, you're on the right track, basically, is my motto right now.
Oh, that's good.
Right? Because... this is a space where all kinds of things are sort of popping up, you know, out of the ground and populating the horizon here. There really are no rules. It could be structured, could be unstructured, could be both. It doesn't matter. The traditional data warehousing vendors are, you know, coming up with ways to do very large data set manipulation in something close to real time. They're doing in-memory database. You could consider that, for example, as big data. they're doing Hadoop in you know, in memory, in a database structure. It's, you know, all kinds of things going on out there. So it's, this is, from a definition standpoint, this is very difficult to pin down. But one of the things I think as storage professionals people need to understand is that traditionally the big data analytics people tend to look at this thing we call big data storage and say, why do we want to go there?
Yeah.
Because they approach storage in a very different way. So a lot of the confusion is generated by people in the IT community that hear big data applied to analytics and applied to storage at the same time and immediately want to put the two together. And right now they really don't go together very well. That's an evolving state.
And is it, so one of the things I'm gathering from other discussions I've had is maybe one of the reasons you say they don't go together is because people that are going to really do big data, they're going to get, and I'll just use HP products that I know, they're going to get DL 160s, and they're going to get 50 of them with a bunch of internal drives and maybe use some kind of software. I don't know if that's Hadoop or what other open source things they may be, and they're going to put all that stuff together and build an environment where the storage is really going to be direct attached storage in a cluster of a large number of servers.
Yes.
Is that kind of where you're going?
Yeah, it's kind of hard
to put the storage in the server?
Absolutely. So the reason it's done is there's this mantra in the analytics community, which is you move the data as close to the computing as you possibly can. Now, believe it or not, I've actually heard the reverse of that. You move the computing as close to the data as you possibly can, and you'll start actually hearing that from storage vendors. Okay, but in the analytics community, it's typically you want to move the data as close to the compute as you can, and the reason you want to do that is to remove as much of the latency in the system.
Yeah, performance is a big deal. Getting the answer quickly, especially for some
deal. Customers
that are going to use this for real-time analytics, and they need
right.
the answer now. It's not
something
they're going to run over the weekend and come back with an answer on Monday.
Not only that, but these are typically built on distributed computing clusters. And there's some rules that have to do with how you manage a consistent state across a cluster that starts to grow in terms
right.
of its size. And so you really want to control latency as you scale this thing up, because if you don't, you start to lose consistency among the nodes, and that's a real problem.
Okay.
So again, what they're trying to do is minimize latency that is sort of forced into the system because you have to make IOs to storage. So you spread those IOs out, okay, across the parallel cluster, and the storage is dedicated to each one of those nodes. So when you're loading data across the nodes, and then you're processing them against them in parallel.
Yep. So you've raised a couple things here that have questions going through my head. You talked about traditional BI data warehousing vendors and how they're starting to do things that look more like big data. What differentiates BI from big data?
Well, I think it's sort of in three dimensions. It's actual size of data set. It's this notion of real time, which is sort of a movable window. I've heard real time described as anything from a few milliseconds to about 5 seconds. And there's a huge swing in there. But that's typically the way people are thinking about real time when they sort of put this into the big data mix, if you will.
Yep.
And again, it's this ability to take data in various different forms, formats, sources, could be GPS, could be machine data, sensory data, combine it with text data, you know, that kind of thing. So it's sort of the mashup idea as well that I
yep.
think is another distinguishing characteristic here.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know how much you know about autonomy, but they were telling me yesterday about some of the tools they have that looks like it's going across everything, structured data and facial recognition stuff where they can do a... So let's just take an example like that. You know, you're working with some government agency that is trying to find a bad guy through a database of pictures that getting picked up in all the street cameras here in Dallas. Is that big data?
Sure, why not? Okay. I mean, I would again, I would not argue with it. If you were then to combine GPS data with the picture data, if you will, then you could put somebody at a certain place at a certain time.
Yeah.
Right? And you could sort of go on from there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Why not?
So one other thought that comes to mind that you stirred a question for me is Hadoop. And I don't know, it seems like whenever anybody says big data that Hadoop is like in the next three words, and that to me seems like that might be a little bit of a buzzword bingo thing that's going on. Is Hadoop really the only game? And why is Hadoop getting so much attention when we talk big data?
So let me answer that question by saying no, it's not the only game in town.
I think you talked about NoSQL in one of your papers as another example.
Right. So there's actually, I think personally, I don't track these things from a market penetration standpoint, but my sense is there are actually more MySQL, NoSQL, NewSQL kinds of clusters being used for these web-facing applications, doing clickstream analysis, sentiment analysis, that kind of thing. There are more of those than there are Hadoop clusters. That said, why has Hadoop, become this very popular thing? And it's become popular really in the last year. I was at a big data, quote-unquote, show last year at about this time, and most of the exhibitors there were in that MySQL, NoSQL community. I went to the same show this year, and all of a sudden Hadoop was apparent, not only in the show floor, but in the presentations. And so one of the MC of the show at the end of the first day said, was commenting about this, by the way, and he said, think of the number of times that you've said the word Hadoop today or heard the word Hadoop today. This is at the end of the first day, and everybody's going off to the bar. And he said, have a drink for every time you've heard the word Hadoop.
And we probably won't see you tomorrow. You'll be in your
people
hotel
room. People were Hadooping their way off the bar and getting totally sloshed. So. It's,
there may be a new term there. Let's go get Hadooped. What are you doing tonight? Let's go get Hadooped after S&W.
So why? I don't know. The little elephant? Maybe. It's just this sort of catchy phrase. I mean, MySQL? Yeah, okay. Hadoop. What's that?
Yeah.
Is this little elephant? It's just become this cool thing.
Yeah.
But there's actually another reason for this. I hear people in the big data community talk about, and it's basically this: that if you go back a few years to when there were search engines all over the place, there's Alta Vista, there's this, that, and the other thing. And there was this Google thing that, was just appearing on the horizon. And 2 years later, Google had just about wiped everybody else off the map. And so people started to say, well, Jesus, how do they do this? How do they build this system? And so Google published a paper on a process they referred to as MapReduce. Mm-hmm. And somebody took that paper and wrote code, gave it to the open source community, and named it after his son's little toy elephant, Hadoop. And so people took a look at the code and said, this is what Google did. Now that we've got somebody that's written code to that, maybe we could do this too. So MapReduce now is codified, if you will, as Hadoop. And everybody sort of looks at Google and looks at MapReduce and at Hadoop and says, here's a way to do the kind of thing that Google was doing. Let's try it.
And one of the things that's, I think, spurring it on, and I'm actually looking at your paper here, so I'm not as smart as I'm going to appear to be now, but there were because it was open source, there's a lot of add-ons. The community was kind of gaining steam, and so this community of open source now is just there's just a lot of people working on adding on to what that started as MapReduce, defined by Google, turned into an open source piece of code.
Right.
That's now
Hadoop. It's pushed forward, within the Apache open source development group. But there are some commercial versions now that are appearing as well. Now, Cloudera is the red hat of Hadoop at the moment. But you're seeing others, Hortonworks, for example, MapR is coming up with versions of Hadoop that are quote-unquote commercialized.
So if you do have a few minutes before they close the expo upstairs, go up there. We do have an autonomy guy up there. I'm actually going to try and do something with him, because that thing that you mentioned, you used probably the right terms that I'm gonna mess up now. But you said looking at web streams and clicks and kind of analyzing what a user's doing when they're on their website, and then doing something based on what behavior they've just had over the last 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Autonomy is actually doing a lot of that, and they're working with some pretty big online retailers to do. You clicked on this, and maybe you might be interested in this, and they're doing it not based on some, hard-coded, you clicked it. It's actually based on all kinds of analytics that they gather, and then based on how somebody's behaving on their website, there's autonomy is actually helping build websites. It seems really interesting. It blew me away just sitting there listening to them, and I'm going to go upstairs and do a podcast with them, hopefully, before we get out of here. But if you don't know much about autonomy, I think you'd be interested, given you've had a lot of focus on information. You're at least for the last, since ILM became a buzzword not so long ago, right? I'm sorry, I'm kind of into those buzzword things and trying to chainsaw through the buzzwords.
We've got clients that are actually doing a lot of ILM things right now, but it actually never died. It just, it just lost its currency, so to speak. But people are doing a lot of ILM things out there right now because there are now the tools to do it.
Right. Well, that was the problem back when people were talking about it. What this had to be 2002 is when 2001 when people really started to talk about it a lot. There was all these promises that just never happened.
Yep.
And even at HP, now that some of those things actually are real, they won't, for the most part, we don't use the term ILM. The group that autonomy is in is called Information Management.
Yes.
Well, we just dropped the L from there, but really at the end of the day, they are starting to deliver on some of those promises of 10 years ago.
Absolutely.
So that's kind of exciting for me to see it.
What you haven't asked me about is storage now in this big data analytics environment. So people are certainly aware of this direct attached storage layer that sits essentially embedded in the compute layer. But what users, particularly at the enterprise level, are looking at now is using, let's say, network storage. And in some specific cases, scale-out NAS, as a secondary storage layer. Okay, so we have, for example, a client that does sentiment analysis, clickstream analysis.
Yeah.
And they do that for, a number of different customers. And each customer has different requirements as to how they want this data analyzed and delivered and that kind of thing. And then real time, near real time, tomorrow, different definitions of when they need this information. But like any cluster of this type, and the cluster they use scales to just I think short of 1,000 nodes. It's a big cluster. They use direct attached storage in each one of these nodes. But then they have a secondary storage layer that's a combination of SAN and NAS. And so what they do is every data that's been in the cluster for something like 90 days gets flushed out to the secondary storage layer. And it's, in a way, like a very large active archive. Okay? That active archive, if you will, grows at the rate of 30 terabytes. Are you ready for this? 30 terabytes a day.
Wow.
Okay, but here's where I'm going with this. This concept of the active archive in this environment is starting to catch on. Okay, because people need to take the results from the analysis and store them sometimes. And you can keep them in the cluster, but the cluster just, you know, keeps building up data, and maybe quite a lot of that data isn't really relevant at any given time, but you want to hang on to it for whatever reason. So
for ILM reasons, it's still got value, but you don't want to get rid of it.
Right, exactly. So there it is. It's there as a layer. Now, what can you do with the layer? Well, you can run other queries against it. You could use it for compliance storage, because a lot of people are now using analytics processes as part of a business process that may generate data that falls under the data governance policies of an enterprise. So how are you going to capture that? Well, this is a place to do it.
Yep.
You know, there are a number of different things that people want to do with this data other than just process it immediately. Or for an immediate application, okay? And so people are starting to create that sort of secondary storage layer out of network storage, okay? Mm-hmm. So that's one use. The other is that if you're not necessarily looking for absolute near real-time or real-time results, you could use network storage as a primary storage layer. And that's rare, but people are in fact starting to do this. Now, the traditionalists will argue that you're adding another network layer into the cluster, which is, you know, adding more latency. And why would you ever want to do that?
Yeah.
But again, it's sort of creating now a storage layer that's not only feeding the cluster, but is also creating this layer where you can do data protection, compliance, you know, some of the other enterprise things that you want to do with your data. But the other thing is this: if you're using personal data, credit card data, you know, if it's data that falls under HIPAA compliance, you know, all that stuff, you have to treat that data in particular ways,
right?
And this is part of data governance.
Yeah.
And, compliance. And so, people now want to use these types of analytics processes in ways that do touch, you know, on occasion some very sensitive data.
Yep.
And, you know, from the perspective of Wall Street, for example, you know, if you're doing microsecond trades, all of that stuff needs to be, you know, saved and reported to the SEC. How are you going to do that?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there is, to me, it gets back to a sort of a classic argument in computing, which, you know, involves storage, which is some people argue that you can do data management and maybe even storage management at the compute layer, right? And so that argues sort of for dumb storage. And then the storage advocates say, wait a minute, if you're going to do data and storage management at the compute layer, you're using compute cycles to do that. Why don't you move those cycles that do that down to the storage layer and let us do it down there? And that's really the argument that's going on here right now.
So, and there's obviously not a right answer yet, but there may be two right answers depending on what's going to work for you. I mean, there's oftentimes a gray here.
That's it.
Yeah. Great. Hey, well, John, I appreciate you spending the time with me. I know there's a lot of
time
left here. And I appreciate you stopping by. Before I let you go, how can somebody that wants to get a hold of you or get a chance to look at stuff you've done? And obviously, you're at Evaluator Group. I don't think we actually said that early on. But how can somebody that wants to maybe see some of your work in this area get a hold of it and get a hold of you?
Get a hold of me, john@evaluatorgroup.com.
Okay.
Go to the website, evaluatorgroup.com, or I have a blog on CNET called Data Driven.
I'll find that link, and I'll leave it on the blog, make it easy for people to find it. But again, thanks, and good catching up if you're here.
Great.
See ya.
You've been listening to Around the Storage Block Podcast. I'm your host, Calvin Zito. You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/HP Storage Guy. And you can find our blog, as always, at www.hp.com/storage/blog. Until next time, thanks for joining.